Love It or Lose It, Monday at 8:30 on Channel 3.
From the Disney MGM Studios in Florida, Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert, If We Pick the Winners.
Oh, unfortunately, oh no, Gene and Robert, they, oh gosh, they, and Roger, sorry. They.
I was going to say, you call him Robert Ebert?
they called out sick.
Oh,
they
no.
Called out sick. They are not going to be picking the Oscars winners this year.
That's a bummer.
But. No, great news, though, because they tapped in the old Cinemaholics crew yet again.
Oh, okay.
Starting to become a thing, isn't it?
Oh, wow.
Welcome to Oscars 2024, If We Picked the Winners. And you are, of course, listening to Cinemaholics, the Major Motion podcast, where normally we talk about the biggest and best films coming to theaters and streaming online.
Do we talk about those still?
Sometimes, if we're in the mood. From the San Francisco Bay Area, I'm John Negroni, film editor for In Between Drafts. com. And from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, he's a freelance film writer, and he's also Will Ashton.
Hey, just putting you on the spot right now. What's the last movie you saw in theaters? Like, straight
Dune
up.
Dune Part 2.
Okay. That's what I thought.
Yes.
You saw that one twice, admittedly. Okay.
Yes. I have not been watching movies. I have been watching some shows. I've been watching Shogun, but no, I haven't been going to screenings, and I've been dealing with some life changes that have made going to the movies a bit not of an option for me lately. And we'll see if that continues. But fortunately, Will Ashton watches movies still.
And I try to.
He tries to. And look, if it has to be one of those things where, Will, you're going to have to review movies while I, compliment your looks, then so be it.
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know. I want to talk about Godzilla with somebody and his buddy King Kong. Friend of me, I guess I should say King Kong. Mm.
I am going to be in Japan for a couple of weeks, so if you want to do that episode, well, you're going to have to find somebody else, because I'm going to be in Japan with the real Godzilla.
Oh, wow. Okay. When are you going to Japan?
This weekend.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good to know.
I thought I told you this. Sorry.
I don't think you did, but maybe I forgot. I don't know.
This is live television.
All right.
Everybody.
Yeah. Now listeners just get to know like what my life has been like for the last like month or so.
Yeah. Will keeps making this joke. He's like upset with me because I pencil him in for like 2-3 weeks at midnight from now or whatever.
It is close to midnight for me, so it's not far off.
Hey, it's like 10 o'clock for you. Sure. Calm down. But hey, you can find more episodes of Cinemaholics, including our full archive on cinemaholics.com, where we also have other bonus content. And you can write into the show anytime by sending us an email, cinemaholicspodcast@gmail.com. If you'd like to support us, you could always leave us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts, but only if you mean it. And we always prefer to if you leave a little review and tell us what you like about the show. Now, as I mentioned before, we're going to be talking about the 96th Academy Awards, but we're going to be picking the winners. Now, the ceremony took place on March 10th of this past year at the Dolby Theater in Hollywood. And, well, Jimmy Kimmel hosted the show. I didn't watch it, but Will, you watched the whole thing, didn't you?
Yeah. I mean, as far as Jimmy Kimmel's hosting goes, I mean, I don't know, he's a little tiresome for me at this point. I have no thing against Jimmy Kimmel as an entertainer or person, but I just think he doesn't have the enthusiasm or interest in film to make him an ideal Oscar host. And I think that was really emphasized when they had John Mulaney present an award or something along those lines. And
he presented at the Governor's Awards ceremony.
Well, no, but he was also at the Oscars. Like he did something like one of the introductions, and he like took.
You talking about the one with Natasha Lyonne, or
no? He was doing like the Field of Dreams bit. You probably didn't see it because you didn't watch the show.
Yeah, I was gonna say I knew he did something.
Yeah, but I mean, he just really just kind of put Jimmy Kimmel to shame, and I hope. Especially with the Governor's Ball going over, as well as, the Governor's Ball, I suppose, can go over. I hope they do let Jimmy, or not Jimmy, John Mulaney host next year. I don't even know if he wants to host or not. I would assume so.
Come on. Yeah. Why wouldn't he? But no, to your point, I would say that I almost forgot that Jimmy Kimmel even hosted this year. But I knew that John Mulaney had cracked some jokes and done some Oscar stuff because those are the clips that got shared online. So, yeah, it is kind of funny how that happened.
Yeah. So, all in all, I mean, the show itself was okay. There are some good standout moments. Like, you got to see Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito together, and they were hassling Michael Keaton in sort of an impromptu moment. There was like a weird but also kind of nice thing where all the actors were given like their own little due by a different presenter in the case of past Oscar winners. So you got to see kind of odd things like Nicolas Cage championing Paul Giamatti, which is very me core, I must say. But no, I love
that combination.
Overall, I mean, I hope they do a season of True Detective together at some point, but you know, or some sort of buddy frenemy sort of thing. But
yeah, it doesn't have to be True Detective. Yeah,
sure. But I will say the winners, I think they were all solid. I don't think there were any major surprises that I can recall. There were some like nice surprises as far as like, oh, okay, like of these two, I think this is going to win, or this seems like it's going to win. Actually went to something else, which we'll discuss later on. And it was like a nice surprise, but
I knew there weren't that many surprises because I barely saw any mention of the ceremony. I didn't know who won Best Picture until like days later because it was really? Such a like everybody kind of knew it was happening. And yeah, I was like, oh, well, that's the thing. I mean, listeners might not know this. I don't use Twitter or anything. So like that seems to be where all the fuss is happening with this stuff. And so if you're not on Twitter, I check Instagram. And so I see some things, but
sure.
Yeah, you're saying I mean, Threads doesn't have a lot of film stuff right now, so
the Oscars aren't maybe popping off on Blue Sky at the moment.
No, Blue Sky, no, I mean, the only stuff I saw for Oscars when people were like complaining about Barbie and how those nominations worked out with Greta Gerwig and Margot Robbie, but you know Ryan Gosling got so there was a lot of chatter at that point, and that was about it that I saw. But I also don't spend a lot of time on social media anymore, so maybe there is some fuss happening, and I'm just missing it. But anyway. To that degree, we should say that the nominations themselves, Oppenheimer led with 13 nominations, the most out of all the other films. Poor Things and Killer of the Flower Moon each had 11 and 10 nominations. And we won't say who won yet in case people are like, well, I don't want to know yet. But we'll say a telecast drew in a decent amount of viewers, especially compared to the last few years, 19.5 million people. That's the most since 2020. And 2020 was like the last normal-ish ceremony, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've heard kind of mixed data about this. I heard it was like only a minor uptick. Like it wasn't like the Oscars are saved sort of numbers, but it was definitely compared to the pandemic, like you're saying, like a noticeable increase in the sense of like movies that broad audiences had probably seen like Barbie and Oppenheimer were recognized and in some cases won. And yeah, I mean, you know, I guess people had a little bit more skin in the game, as you were saying, like as far as like Barbie being recognized or shut out as far as people saw it. But yeah, I mean, as we were saying, overall, solid year. I mean, I can't fault Oppenheimer winning. I thought it was a really good film. It maybe wasn't my number one pick for that category, but I'm certainly happy to see Christopher Nolan get his due as a director and as producer. So yeah, good stuff.
Let's begin with actor in a leading role. I'm going to list off the nominations. And first, we'll pick our winners, and then we'll say who actually won. So starting with actor in a leading role, we have Jeffrey Wright was nominated for American Fiction. Paul Giamatti was nominated for The Holdovers. Coleman Domingo was nominated for Rustin. Cillian Murphy was nominated for Oppenheimer. And Bradley Cooper was nominated for Maestro. For me, this is easy. I would easily give it to Paul Giamatti for The Holdovers. Sure, it's a little tough because I think Cillian Murphy is quite fantastic in Oppenheimer, but Oppenheimer also has just such a tremendous cast that he gets a lot of help from Downey Jr. and others. Whereas like Paul Giamatti is the heart and soul of that movie. And even though, yes, there are two other powerhouses in the film, particularly the two Divine Joy Randolph, who gets nominated in an actress in a supporting role. Paul, this is just like the role that I was dreaming of for Giamatti. So yeah, he's my pick. What about you?
I mean, it's hard for me to go against Giamatti, and I think he'd be my pick as well. I mean, I am happy Cillian Murphy won in the sense that is fun.
I hadn't announced that yet. Will, you spoiled it.
Well, I mean, I will say Cillian Murphy is definitely a good second place for me, as a sense of like, it is always rewarding when the Academy gives these more understated, intuitive performances the big award. You know, like, I think back to like Casey Affleck winning for Manchester by the Sea. Like, to me, those performances stick out a little bit more, and they seem more rewarding when you look back at them as winners, opposed to something like Rami Malek and Bohemian Rhapsody, which are like showy but not as substantive. And so, you know, it just kind of it like those type of wins show like the Academy can be a little flash in the pan as far as these wins. I think Cillian Murphy winning for this performance is going to age well. I think it's a really good performance, a film that people really like, and I take no fault with it. But yeah, I just think Giamatti just nails the performance, and he is just so imbued to that character and that role, and it just feels like such a well-rounded emotional performance that I have to give it to Giamatti, but Murphy is a very close second for me.
I wonder if there'll be any others that we agree on. Let's see. But let's go to actor in a supporting role. Now, for this nomination crew, we have Robert De Niro for Killers of the Flower Moon. We have Robert Downey Jr. for Oppenheimer, which we just mentioned. Sterling K. Brown for American Fiction. Mark Ruffalo for Poor Things. And Ryan Gosling for Barbie. This is a tough category for me. I love all of these actors, and I like all of their work in all of these movies. So to me, there's no wrong answer here. But the best answer for me, it's got to be Ryan Gosling. I'm pulling a surprise. I love this performance from he does in Barbie. And I get it. It's not the typical sort of Oscar, you know, dramatic powerhouse performance, but it's a shaking performance. It's like a culturally significant performance. It's one that makes me laugh, makes me feel something. I think genuinely seemed to have like an impact on men. And I think that whole dance number alone just for me earns him the Oscar in my heart. And that's my case. I'm sticking to it.
I think that's very understandable. I debated picking Gosling as well, but this might surprise you. And it might even surprise me a little bit because I don't remember how strong I was on his performance at the time. But I got to give it to Robert Downey Jr. Or not Robert Downey Jr. Wow. I got to give it to Robert De Niro, I meant to say, in Killers of the Flower Moon.
Not a bad choice.
I think, you know, I mean, when you know that Martin Scorsese and Robert De Niro are together, I think a lot of people have expectations. And I think it's understandable that this performance kind of got lost in the weeds a little bit because people just sort of expect great performances from when this actor reunites with this director. But I think what he's doing here is a lot more subtle and a lot more ingrained into this very rotten, dark, charismatic character that, you know, in the way that he kind of warps our perception of how we see him and playing against his screen presence. I think it's really fascinating. I think it's very thoughtful as far as it as the way that we see Robert De Niro in this performance and the way that he's keyed into it. But yeah, I mean, as much as I like seeing Ryan Gosling in scene stealing mode, I think I'm going to have to give it to Robert. Yeah, Robert
totally
De Niro.
Understandable. Robert De Niro. Yeah, I mean, it's just what a great villainous role. So Robert Downey Jr. won for Oppenheimer. But that's tough for me. I think he had the momentum for a long time in the award circuit. But I honestly, I'm kind of with you. Like, I think like Ryan Gosling is my heart choice. But to me, De Niro is the more interesting performance between him and Downey Jr. And I found it kind of strange that Downey Jr. had all the momentum. I think it's a good performance, but well, I don't know.
I think it's just one of those things where everyone just expects Robert De Niro to be great. And it's like, you know, he's gotten his due. He's gotten, you know, two Oscars at this point. I feel like people just saw Downey Jr. as like kind of like this like return to great cinema sort of thing. Like he's done with the Marvel movies. He's kind of like, you know, done his part, keep cinema alive. But like now he's returning to serious movies. And like he's had this redemption story like two or three times, you know, in the sense of like, you know, he's come over addiction. He's re-energized his career. He's become one of the biggest movie stars in the world. Now he's finally going to get his Oscar kind of thing. I get the narrative there and I get why they gave it to him. If that was, maybe they just like the performance. Maybe they're not even thinking that far ahead. But, you know, I mean, I think of the two, and they are, like you said, they are kind of similar performances in some respect. But I feel like what De Niro is doing is more captivating and more chilling even compared to what Downey Jr. did. And I like Downey Jr. in that movie, but I got to give it to De Niro.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page pretty much. All right, let's go to actress in a leading role. We're going to go through all of the acting categories here. All right, so for actress in a leading role, we have Emma Stone for Poor Things. We have Annette Bening for Naiad. We have Lily Gladstone for Killers of the Flower Moon. We have Sandra Hüller for Anatomy of a Fall. And we have Carey Mulligan for Maestro. This one, for me, it's a little bit conflicting because, again, this is another category where there are a couple here where it could go either way for me. It came down, for me, this came down to Emma Stone, Lily Gladstone, and Sandra Hüller. And I was genuinely going back and forth constantly because this is my rationale. To me, this is Emma Stone's best performance. She already got an Oscar, but this is an even better performance. So to me, it's like her second Oscar. Please, will you take it? With Lily Gladstone, that is just like a powerhouse performance in a totally different way. And it's one that really sneaks up on you, especially as like you get to know this character, kind of similar to what you were talking about with De Niro. And then Sandra Hüller in Anatomy of a Fall. I've never felt the emotions for a character in a movie like I felt for this person. This kind of like strange mix of rooting for them, but also it's like mixed with sympathy and regret and suspicion that she just kind of nails it, right? When it came down to it, for me, it's Emma Stone. I just think what she's doing in Poor Things is just plain brilliant. It's like another level of what an actor is doing so boldly and just so like finding a way to kind of bare her soul to all of these people and just giving zero F's about it. That to me is the mark of a great actress. And I'm just happy to see that she is good old Emily Stone, nicknamed Emma, I guess, by some, kind of killing it, even still as she's maturing into the next stage of her career.
Yeah, I mean, I think Emma Stone is on a great path right now. I think she, as an actress and as a producer, is really going in some interesting, fascinating directions. I can't wait for Kind, or I think it's called Kind of Kindness, the next one that Yorgos and
something
Emma
like
are
that,
doing
yeah.
together. You know, as much as I like The Favorite and Poor Things, this kind of return, this looks like the return to like Yorgos being a little freak kind of thing that
Donizons? I think.
Yeah, yeah. That I like. And I know she also produced I Saw a TV Glow, which is looking to be one of the most outstanding films this year based on early buzz. But I'm going to have to go with a different Stone, in this case, Lily Gladstone. And it's kind of similar for reasons I was saying with Cillian Murphy, where it's, I think, like you were saying, that she is the emotional core of the film. I think her stoicism, her respect for the culture, the way that she inhabits this real life person in a way that's respectful, but inherently integral to the story and the character, while never overplaying her hand or feeling that she is overshadowed by these two titans of the big screen, in that case, Leonardo DiCaprio and Robert De Niro, while giving this very emotionally kind of withdrawn performance, I think is really, really compelling and such a great showcase for her. And I can understand, you know, even though Cillian Murphy was the less showy performance he won, I kind of figured that Emma Stone was ultimately going to win because, like you said, it is a flashier, kind of more showy kind of performance, even though I think she's very good in that film. But I don't know. I just feel like Lily Gladstone's performance is the one that sticks with me more. And I do really like Sandra Hüller, though my semi-controversial opinion is I think I liked her a little bit more in Zone of Interest. Like, I think it's a harder performance. And I get the, again,
it's not that controversial, though. I think that's a reasonable kind of, I mean, they're just both great movies, right?
Sure. I just think what she ends up doing in Zone of Interest is maybe a little bit more, maybe not impressive, but a little bit more riveting for me, I guess, given what that movie pulls off. Though, of course, I really liked Anatomy of a Fall, one of my favorites of last year, as well as Zone of Interest. So, yeah, I think we had some of those three, some really strong nominees. I got to give it to Lily Gladstone, though.
Yeah. No disrespect to Carey Mulligan and Annette Bening. I didn't see Naiad, but and I thought Carey Mulligan was quite fine in Maestro, but yeah, I think that it really came down to those three for me and, well, probably a lot of other people. But okay, actress in a supporting role, our last acting category. And, I forgot to say Emma Stone won for Poor Things. I think you already said it, but yeah. Actress in a supporting role for the nominees, we have America Ferrera for Barbie, Jodie Foster for Naiad, Divine Joy Randolph for The Holdovers, and Emily Blunt for Oppenheimer. Yeah, this is no contest for me, Divine Joy Randolph by a country mile. And I saw some discourse, you know, for, you know, criticism against this performance in The Holdovers, just from a very vocal, small group of people. And I just got to say, I just plainly disagree. I don't think so. The accusation is that she's playing a mammy, this kind of caricature of an African-American woman who is like only exists in the movie to serve white people. And I just think that that's like a it's just something I completely disagree with. I don't think that's her role in this movie whatsoever. She has her own life, her own agency. It has nothing to do with the white characters. She just has a job and she does her job. And she is, what she is doing in this movie through mourning and grief is completely separated from anything else with those characters. So, and I think that was like the only backlash I was seeing to this movie that was anybody like, I saw some people saying like, oh, The Holdovers is fine, I guess. Or like, oh, it just looks like a gimmicky kind of like, what if we made a movie that looks like it was made in the 70s? Like, okay, sure. But no, I mean, I think this movie, the heart and soul of it, a lot of it comes down to Randolph for me, because you spend all this time with the young kid actor who's just, by the way, fantastic. And then Paul Giamatti, of course, and they have their whole dynamic. And then we cut to Randolph a lot of the time, and it just kind of recenters the movie emotionally. And that to me is what an actress in a supporting role can do best, honestly. And that's what she does best here, in my opinion.
Once again, we are in agreement. Going back to The Holdovers. Yeah, I divine Randolph Joy. I'm not going to buck the trend either of any of the award voting groups or with you. I think she is fantastic in the film. I think it's a well-deserved win. I mean, I do think Danielle Brooks is quite good in an otherwise so-so film, in that case being The Color Purple. And yeah. I mean,
she's,
I think,
probably
like,
my second choice, even though I don't like that movie.
And I think, you know, I don't think Nyad's a good film. I think Jodie Foster is good in it. She's like the best part about an otherwise kind of meh film. You know, I think the only nomination here I really buck against is America Ferrera, because that should have gone to Penelope Cruz for Ferrari, I think. But
I agree 100%. When I saw America Ferrera on the nominee list, I was like, wait, why? Like, that's not a very, I don't know, like, no disrespect to her. I think she's a fine actress, but she, her role in Barbie is not very significant. Right. I mean, I don't remember it being very, like, I don't know.
She
great?
Had the monologue about women, and that's why she got nominated.
Okay, I mean, it's a fun monologue, I guess, but
right, whatever.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think the rest of the nominees were fine, even if I wasn't crazy about the films themselves that some of them were nominated in. But yeah, I think Divine Randolph Joy, this was her Oscar, I think, from the get-go, and I don't disagree with it. I think it's well-deserved.
Yeah. Also, surprised Emily Blunt got nominated for Oppenheimer, because that is such an anonymous performance to me. I thought Florence Pugh was way more memorable, but I don't know.
Yeah. I don't think I would go so far as say anonymous, but yeah, I don't think that to me was as impressive as what Florence Pugh did, but whatever.
All right. Animated feature film. Now, this is a semi-contentious one. Now, for the nominees, we have Elemental. That is the Pixar film. We also have Nimona, which was on Netflix. Originally, it was kind of like a Blue Sky Disney thing, if I recall. We have The Boy and the Heron, the latest Miyazaki film with Studio Ghibli. We have Robot Dreams, which I didn't watch, and Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. Now, for me, the winner for this one is also very easy, but again, a little controversial. That's Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, similar to the last Spider-Verse movie, which did win that year. Spoiler alert, and did not win this year, which I understood. I mean, it's a sequel. It's also a superhero movie when they're not quite as in vogue right now. And so I wasn't expecting this to win, but I also was just like, man, this is the movie that, to me, is the epitome of like what an animated film can be. I just think every detail of it is just scrumptious. I love this movie to the moon and back. I love everything about it. It's one of my favorites of the year. And I just think it takes what was so great about Into the Spider-Verse and it just levels it up in every respect. So yeah, all power to the Spider-Verse for me. It's number one. I that's not to say anything super negative about the other movies, at least the ones that I saw, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to relitigate anything, and we have a lot of other nominees to discuss. I think I've already made it clear in past recordings that I am going to pick The Boy and the Heron. I think Miyazaki, if this is his send-off, I think it's an absolutely beautiful send-off. I think what it says about his legacy, his career, him as a storyteller is pretty profound and beautiful, but I also just think on its own merits, it's a really lovely, wonderful story and gorgeously animated.
The Academy agrees with you.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was really heartening because I was 100% sure how it's going to shake out. I could very easily have seen Spider-Verse winning, and that's not to say I'm against Spider-Verse. I think it's very good. I don't think it's as good as the last one. I think a lot of that comes down to my issues with it being a part one. It does feel incomplete to me in a way that I feel like the first one obviously is a lot more robust. The only thing I will add, because I didn't really like Elemental all that much, and I thought Nimona was good. I didn't love it as much as some other folks, but I thought it was good. Robot Dreams is really charming and wonderful. I do think it is a well-deserved nomination, and I'm glad I got to see it. And I'm glad through the nomination that got a little early release before it comes out officially in May. Yeah, I think it's well worth your time. I think you'd really like it, John, as well. So yeah, definitely think it's worth checking out. It would probably be my second or third pick after Boy and the Heron, but Boy and the Heron is my number one choice.
All right. I mean, hey, look, it was a stat category this year. Good stuff on there. And though I do, I kind of agree. Elemental, I don't dislike that movie at all. But I never understood the kind of like attempt to make it seem like Elemental was better than it was. I was like, no, it's just kind of okay. And that's fine. We can enjoy okay movies. It happens. All right. Let's go to cinematography. For this one, we have Oppenheimer, cinematographer Hoyt Van Hoytema. We have El Conde, cinematographer Edward Lachman, Rodrigo Prieto for Killers of the Flower Moon, Robbie Ryan for Poor Things, and Matthew Libatique for Maestro. And this is a tough one. For me, it came down to Poor Things and Oppenheimer. And I think ultimately, I got to give it to Oppenheimer. I do think that as much as I love what Ryan is doing in Poor Things, I think that it's electric, the way the cinematography informs the story. I just think Oppenheimer stuck with me a little bit more in terms of how it's shot and just the variety of the shots, because it's also a very long movie, similar to Poor Things, but the way it kind of just, it just really held my attention, especially in IMAX. And I didn't see Poor Things in IMAX, but I don't think it would have been nearly the same. But yeah, just in terms of like what Oppenheimer does with the color grading and the way it switches to black and white to color in very specific ways, I just found it to be a just more visually interesting film. And I think the camera work in it is basically impeccable. I don't remember there being anything like jarring or weird. It just was like a full on good the whole time. So for me, it's Oppenheimer. What about you?
Oh, I gotta buck the trend. This might actually be where I'm most controversial, because I am between El Conde and Maestro. I don't know.
Maestro, I will say, we didn't talk about Maestro that much, but the cinematography is pretty good in that movie. Not going to lie. Yeah.
I think cinematography, I don't really get why Maestro became such a Oscar villain this year. Like, I get it has problems. I don't think it's as good as A Star is Born, but I think it's way more interesting and weirder than people give it credit. I don't think it's your standard cut and paste Oscar-y bait sort of film that people are making it out to be. I think it's a lot more personal and audacious than it got credit during the Oscar season, but that's neither here nor there.
I agree. I think, you know what? That Snoopy joke is truly one of a kind. And
seriously,
applause.
Who left Snoopy in the vestibule? Like, we never got to know the answer to that. I sometimes wrestle at night wondering. Yeah. Hmm. You know, like some other things in that movie. But no, I think for me, I'm going to go with El Conde, which I think of the films that were nominated, that's probably the weakest, even though I do like El Conde. I think the cinematography is what stands out to me the most of those. Like, I think Cote did a nice job, and I think Ryan did a nice job with their films. I feel like I've seen better work from both of them, to be honest. And I would say the same thing about Pierto for Killers of the Flower Moon. But, and you know, obviously, Lachman has done amazing work with amazing filmmakers, including Todd Haynes, but I just think the look of El Condone is just really outstanding. And then there are just some shots in that movie that truly just kind of took my breath away as far as how beautifully they're composed, the way that they use black and white and the sumptuousness of the frame. Got to give it to that movie. And I know I'm a sucker for black and white. I know I think I picked Lighthouse for similar reasons a few years back, but what can I say?
I don't blame you. I didn't see El Conde, but it looked really cool. And I love the concept, like the premise of it, the vampire dictator stuff. Like, yeah, I forget who, somebody reviewed it for us for In Between Drafts. Might have been Pedro. And he was a fan. And yeah, I mean, it looks like a cool movie. Yeah.
I will say, I mean, for all the movie's faults, and maybe this will entice you, it's basically like Succession by way of What We Do in the Shadows. It's not quite as good as either, but that's kind of the vibe it's going for. There's a third act reveal twist joke that I think is one of the funniest like gags that I saw last year. So, you know, it's overall a lumpy kind of movie, but I think it has a charm, and some of those charms relate to the cinematography, which I would give it an Oscar for.
So those are our picks, but my pick was the actual winner, and that was Oppenheimer, which did take the award. It won a lot of awards, as you can tell. Costume design is next for us. And for this one, we have Barbie. The designer there was Jacqueline Duran. We also had Jacqueline West for Killers of the Flower Moon. We had Ellen Mirojnik for Oppenheimer. We had Janti Yates and Dave Crossman for Napoleon. And finally, we had Holly Waddington for Poor Things. Now, I ultimately never saw Napoleon. I do want to get to it because it's been something that, like, maybe I'll watch it on my flight this weekend. Why not? Maybe it might not be a great flight movie, depending on what's in it, but who knows? This one, I struggle with a little bit. For me, it's like a three-way tie that I have to pick one thing. It's between Poor Things, Barbie, and Killers of the Flower Moon. Ultimately, I'm going to give it to Barbie. I just think the costume design in Barbie is just so unique because it's obviously riffing off of like existing costumes, right? But it's doing it in a way that really, like, okay, you do have the sort of authentic costumes, right? But it transitions and it changes over the course of the movie and it fits the story so well. I think specifically everything that like the evolution of Margot Robbie's kind of wardrobe and also Weird Barbie's wardrobe, like all of that is just so fun. And then of course, like the way the Kens kind of become unhinged and how their costumes reflect that. And it's beautifully simple, especially in the I'm Not Ken number, where like I literally, when the second time I watched Barbie, my buddies and I, it was a boys' night. We all dressed in like the black shirt, black jeans. It was super chill. Will couldn't make it. Yeah, he couldn't get out of the house. He was a little bit too busy for us. But yeah, for me, it's Barbie. Those are the costumes. It's tough. It's so tough because Poor Things and Killers of the Flower Moon also just were so fantastic in this department. But yeah, that's where I land ultimately.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of just took everything I was going to say. That's exactly how I felt about Barbie. And that's why I was going to pick it. And also,
we
just
have three so far. Wow.
I also just like when a like more contemporary film wins this award. I feel like it's always kind of a cliche when it's like one of the period films wins the costumes because the costumes are old fashioned. You like pay more attention to them. But for me, I think this award usually comes down to not only how great the costumes are, but how much those costumes sort of inform the story and how much they lend or add to it. And then, like you said, I think the costumes in Barbie are not only becoming kind of iconic. Like I saw a lot of people, you know, dressed as various Barbie and Kens for Halloween, and just, you know, it just seemed like they really took off. But I think they really lent the characters and the story well, and I think they inform what Greta Gerwig and Noah Baumbach were doing with that film super well. So, and also just fun and poppy and eye-catching costumes to boot. So I'm gonna say Barbie as well.
Heck yeah. All right, now the actual winner was Poor Things, which I was a little surprised. I thought maybe Oppenheimer or Killers of the Flower Moon might take it, but I was happy Poor Things got something here. All right. Directing. Now, for this one, we have Justine Triet for Anatomy of a Fall, Yorgos Lanthimos for Poor Things, Jonathan Glazer for The Zone of Interest, Christopher Nolan for Oppenheimer, and Martin Scorsese for Killers of the Flower Moon. All right, here's another tough one for me. I love the directing in all of these movies. I don't think there's a wrong answer here. I think it just kind of comes down to the margins, honestly. I think if I have to pick a movie, it kind of comes down to Poor Things for me. It's tough. Like, I think if I had to narrow it down all the way, I think I would bring it, like, it would be difficult, but I'd bring it down to Anatomy of a Fall, Poor Things, and The Zone of Interest. And then if I have to narrow it down even further, then it goes to Poor Things and The Zone of Interest. And there are things about The Zone of Interest, even on further reflection, where I'm like, man, there's just the way the whole thing was directed, where I'm just like, this is just such a incredibly just well done film. And it's so unique. But with Poor Things, I'm just so impressed with how bold it is and how it holds your attention the entire movie. Ultimately, just barely, I give it to The Zone of Interest, only because I think that it's also as bold, but it's also just doing things that, to me, I think Lanthimos, you kind of touched on this, Lanthimos has done movies like Poor Things before, so it's not that unique for the director. It is in some ways, but not in every way. Zone of Interest, I think, for Glazer, I just think is just something that he's like working with that is just next level for me. So it's so close, but Zone of Interest.
Oh, I mean, I do think there is some uniqueness to what Yorgos is doing with Poor Things compared to his rest of his filmography. I think it's a lot more, you know, ambitious as far as like it has that steampunk vibe, and there's a lot of great stuff that he's doing visually that feels like a step up for him. Maybe not a full maturity thing as far as how goofy and juvenile some of the jokes get, but like clearly he's advancing and really taking a kind of Gilliam kind of a change of pace for.
Yeah, I do stuff, agree. But, like I said, I narrowed it all the way down to poor things.
But, no. I mean, I honestly thought by picking Zone of Interest that would be kind of going against the grain and that I would have to fight for it a little bit more. But I was surprised. Yeah, you picked Zone of Interest as well. That was my pick. So,
well, you know,
I mean,
what ultimately sold it for me? It was this like thing I saw about how they filmed it with the way that they filmed everybody doing their routines and stuff.
Yeah, like
and I didn't realize
cameras.
That. Huh?
Like with multiple camera setups and like, yeah.
And to me, I was just like, that is insanely brilliant. Like that to me kind of that's kind of what pushed me over the edge, honestly.
I mean, I think my favorite films of these would probably be Killers of the Flower Moon, but I just think in terms of the direction, and not to say anything about Martin Scorsese direct, obviously, I think he did a brilliant job. I think all these nominations are well deserved, which is why I kind of push back a little bit about like the, like, obviously I like Barbie, but like it's not like none of these nominees were undeserving. It's not like there's like the fourth nominee was like, I don't know, Naiad or something, but like, but that's neither here nor there. Yeah, I think in terms of just what they accomplished as far as like their clear vision, this a sense of like control of the narrative, the control of the tone and style, and especially something that's so tightrope like Zone of Interest, I really have to give it to Glazer. I think it's really quite a feat, and I can see why people would be against it because it's not as flashy as something like Poor Things. But, you know, I think he did an outstanding job, and I think it would be my pick.
Would you replace any of these with Barbie, or would you keep this list as is?
It's tough to say. I mean,
I would.
I don't think I would personally put Barbie over any of these. I don't think I'd be mad if for which one.
I would put Barbie over Killers of the Flower Moon.
Oh, okay.
Not by a ton, but a little bit.
I gotta disagree, but, you know. That's
Man,
the
that's
beauty
the game.
Of us, us picking
show business.
The winners. Yeah,
but yeah, but it's not like I do it like paintlessly, that's for sure. Okay, documentary feature film. Now, this is one where I can't really participate. I didn't see any of these movies. I feel terrible.
I did see, I saw all the nominees this year, I should say. I'm surprised I didn't say that earlier, but I'll be brief.
Yeah, usually
you
put a point on it. Like usually we're just talking like, hey, Will, what did you have for lunch today? And you're like, well, I was watching all of the nominees for the Oscars this year, which was quite difficult. Okay, well, that's right. Great, Will. But
but no, I'll try to be quick because, you know, we still got several more categories to discuss. But
yeah, let me list them off for you at the very least. Mm-hmm. We have The Eternal Memory. We have Four Daughters, To Kill a Tiger, Bobby Wine, The People's President, and 20 Days in Mariupol.
And I will say, I think this is a really outstanding year for this category. Like, I know some people were annoyed that, like, some films like the Michael J. Fox film and the Baptiste film didn't get nominated. But, like, I think all these are very strong, compelling films in their own right. I mean, maybe the weakest would be the Bobby Wine one, but that's still a good documentary. But, you know, I will say, I held off on three of these until the end. And so I watched, like, 20 Days in Mariupol, Four Daughters, and To Kill a Tiger, like, at the end. Would not recommend that. I would definitely space
those
out.
Are they pretty depressing?
Out.
Like, was
they're all depressing
much?
Films.
Oh my. Okay.
You know, like one's dealing with like Alzheimer's, one's dealing with child abuse, one's dealing with the war in Ukraine.
Jeez.
It's a heavy category.
And for Will, that was Tuesday.
Sure. But no, I think 20 Days in Mariupol is a really strong documentary. That's what won, and I think it's understandable from a filmmaking and political standpoint why it won. To me, I gotta give it to Kill the Tiger, which tells this very personal story with sensitivity, but with emotional integrity and honesty while respecting the lives of the characters, but also really getting invested in the story and helping you understand the gravity of it without losing that personal touch and the importance of what it needs to say and how it tells it. I think it's a really strong documentary. Obviously, it's hard to watch, but it's on Netflix right now. I would definitely recommend it. To Kill a Tiger would be my pick.
Oh, yeah. It sounds very, very interesting. All right. Let's go to documentary short film. We'll knock this one out as well. And similar, as you can imagine, big surprise. John has also not watched any of these. Would have been a little bit easier because they're short films, but what are you going to do? Sure. For this one, we have the ABCs of Book Banning. We have The Last Repair Shop. We have The Barber of Little Rock, Island in Between, and Nai Nai and Waipo. Will Ashton, which one did you pick? I'm going to guess.
Okay.
I'm going to guess that you picked The Barber of Little Rock. I'm basing this on something.
I'm going to say, in the way that this was a really strong year for the documentary features, this was not a great year for the documentary shorts. I felt like a lot of these were kind of middling, you know, like more like average than great. With ABC's book banning being outright bad, like the worst thing I think that was nominated in any category this year.
Wow. Now I got to see it.
I never thought I'd say the phrase, this could have been a TikTok for a short film, but that's the
that's where that's we are. Vibe. Yeah.
Yeah. For me, I think The Last Repair Shop is probably the best of the bunch. And
I was going to say that one too. Ugh.
And normally I feel like with the shorts, I don't usually groove with like what they pick. Maybe, I don't know, I think documentary, maybe I do, but I think it's a really touching story. I think you get to know on a personal and economical stance, like what's going on here. It's very lovely. It's gorgeously filmed. There's some really fun asides and also some really touching and heartbreaking asides from the people. But it also just shows you how art can make a deep impact into people's lives in a way that doesn't sound as cheesy as I just made it. So, yeah, I think it's a very strong little documentary. I don't know if I'd, you know, go so far as to say it deserves an Oscar, but of the nominees, I would pick it.
All right. Well, all right. So, and it won The Last Repair Shop, as you said. Film editing. Now, this is an interesting category. We have some powerhouses here, starting with The Holdovers, but also Poor Things, Killers of the Flower Moon, Oppenheimer, and Anatomy of a Fall. And I forgot to say the editors' names. I'm so sorry. Kevin Tent for The Holdovers, Yorgos Mavroprosidis for Poor Things, Thelma Schoonmaker for Killers of the Flower Moon, Laurent Senechal for Anatomy of a Fall, and Jennifer Lame for Oppenheimer. For me, this one, it's not too tough of a pick. I do think that I love all these movies. I think they're all very good. But when it comes to the editing, the only one of these movies that really stands out to me in that department is Oppenheimer. I think that particularly, like, there are certain scenes where just the transition that this movie goes on and the certain scenes are placed in certain places to evoke a certain idea or a theme that is just very tremendously done, especially for such a long film. So I just think Oppenheimer is more impressive as a structured film. I think that it's more it's very unique. It's very vigorous in terms of its structure. It's definitely taken some chances. That's for sure. So yeah, and it's tough because I think Anatomy of a Fall is also very impressive in this because it's holding your attention for so long and the pacing is just right with that movie. Holdovers, I think that it's a bit more sort of tried and true. It's very familiar in terms of like its structure and how it works. And so that it's to the movie's credit, but you know, Killers of the Flower Moon, though, is the one where I was close with this one, because I think that you kind of touched on it before when you were talking about De Niro, but the theme of that movie, the banality of evil, and like the decision to tell the story in this way and to show certain things at certain moments, I think is probably the most brilliant thing about the movie. So I was like, ooh, you know, this, it comes close for sure. And then with Poor Things, I think Poor Things similar. It's just on a great level in terms of, you know, what it does and how it fits everything in. The only thing is I don't love the first chunk of it, and I think that it could have been trimmed a bit. So because I have like a little bit of a quibble with Poor Things, it doesn't make it all the way for me. So long-winded way of me saying Oppenheimer's the one. Jennifer Lame, she's not lame today.
Oh, John, I wish we could go back to Yucky and Yammon, you know? I mean, I also picked Oppenheimer. Me, I think it was between Oppenheimer and Killers of the Flower Moon, and I think for similar reasons for both, which is they take these very bulky, expansive, you know, time generation spanning stories and respect the integrity of the story and the depth of what they're saying and have these very long epic scopes, but never feel like the lengths are cumbersome. I know some people push back against the length of Killers of the Flower Moon, but for me, I think that both those movies move really quick considering the length and considering the depth of each story and stuff. But I think for Oppenheimer, I just really admire the intensity of it all, I think, as well. It's like the way that it's able to tell this very comprehensive, large, nuanced story, but also getting us into the fragile, tormented headspace of our main character and gravity and the understanding the gravity of the situation of a historical event that we're all at least somewhat familiar with, but making it feel fresh and vigorous and make us feel, you know, that it's coming alive again. I think it's no small feat. And I think that what the story pulls off, a lot of it, the success of Oppenheimer is due in large part, I think, due to the editing of the film. And so I got to give it to Oppenheimer.
And all so you, me, and the Academy agree on this one. I don't know if that's happened yet in this conversation. But yeah, Oppenheimer did win it for film editing, and we clearly agree.
Yeah, supporting actress, I think we all agreed on so far.
Oh yeah, you're right. You're right. Okay, let's go to international feature film. Here is an interesting one. We have Spain's selection, Society of the Snow. We have Germany's The Teacher's Lounge. We have the United Kingdom's The Zone of Interest. We have Italy's Io Capitano. And then we have Japan's Perfect Days. This is a tough one for me because I've only seen one of these movies. If I had to guess, now, the two other movies that I didn't see but were on my list of, like, these look like John movies. I was told that they're John movies. Perfect Days, for sure. Society of the Snow, I was told, yeah, you'd probably like that. Perfect Days, though, I do kind of wonder if this movie would have, based on what I know about it, if it would have been like in my top 10 of the year, quite honestly, but I didn't see it. So I kind of, by default, I got to go The Zone of Interest. Unfortunately, I don't have a nuanced take on this one. You all, I've already said what I like about that movie. There you go.
Yeah. I mean, I was similarly also between The Zone of Interest and Perfect Days. So I have seen all the films, so I can say that more definitively. Yeah. I mean, both those films, we never end up doing our top 10 films of the year. I don't know if we ever will at this point, but they are both on that list, spoiler alert, and I love both films immensely, but I think, as we said before, I think Zone of Interest, what it pulls off, what it accomplishes, is truly no small feat, and I think it's such a riveting, important film that I gotta give it to Zone of Interest, even though I do love the warm blanket that is Perfect Days, and I really do think you will like that movie a lot, John, whenever you do get around to seeing it, if you do get around to seeing it, of course, but, you know, I hope while you're in Japan, maybe you can check it out. I don't know. Maybe on the trip to Japan.
I guess those, yeah, you know what? Those days weren't perfect enough, I guess, sure. What it comes down
actually,
to.
Actually, I would say for you, if you do get the chance on the flight to Japan, I would put on Perfect Days.
I have the DVD of it for the screener. I don't have an online thing. I'd have to go through some hoops, but it's probably going to be worth it. All right. Makeup and hairstyling. So for this one, we have Golda, which we haven't seen or talked about yet. We have Oppenheimer, big surprise. We have Maestro, Poor Things, and Society of the Snow. For this one, you know, I'm going to have to... I have to go with Maestro. I think the makeup and hairstyling in Maestro is actually really good.
It is, yeah. I don't know why you're laughing about it. What? Yeah, no, it's really good. I don't know why you're laughing about it. Yeah, it is.
Poor Things also great, but, you know, I think it has Willem Dafoe. And I think, like, that is just such a great, you know.
Oh, sure, yeah.
My only thing with Poor Things is that it is a little bit, I don't know, it wasn't that, it's not that it isn't impressive. I just think that Maestro has such a better illusion to it. And I think the way that Cooper kind of ages through the film is, like, it's done in a very subtly good way. And also with Carey Mulligan, too. So I gotta get to Maestro. I think it was tough to make Bradley Cooper look like Leonard Cohen. So I'm pretty impressed. Yeah,
Leonard Bernstein, of course.
Leonard Bernstein, sorry.
But no, I agree. I mean, I think there was some controversy about this. I think mostly from people who hadn't seen the film yet, saying things I don't think really need to be relitigated at this point. But no, I think the old man makeup alone for Maestro is genuinely incredible. Like in a way that like. It feels like some of the best to ever do it.
It's,
I think,
so
in a way
convincing.
That,
yeah.
I do think Poor Things is very, very impressive from a makeup standpoint, not only for Willem Dafoe, but it's funny that this is called makeup and hairstyling, but the hairstyling part usually gets overlooked. And I do think the hair styling in Poor Things is actually really impressive considering its commitment to like authenticity and like really kind of making it look real and authentic and making sure like nobody had like off-putting wigs or like anything that seemed out of place. Like I think Yorgos was really particular about that, and I think it shows in the film. However, I still gotta give it to Maestro. I think
I have to say with Poor Things, I at least appreciate that Lanthimos kind of rolled with it, with Emma Stone's hair being black, because apparently that wasn't the original intention. I'm glad they stuck with it, though. I forget why that happened. Like, I think she dyed her hair, or just, like, there was some mishap or miscommunication or something, and it kind of worked to the movie's benefit, honestly. Okay, music, original score. So this is going to be the original score, so not the original song. We'll do that next. And, I forgot to say, Poor Things did win for makeup and hairstyling. I forgot to mention that. Okay, but for original score, We have American Fiction, composer was Laura Cartman. We have Oppenheimer, which was Ludwig Göransson. We had Robbie Robertson for Killers of the Flower Moon. We had Jerskine Fendricks for Poor Things. And we had John Williams for Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, which I just saw a headline that that movie lost Disney like $130 million or $190 million. Unbelievable.
I think it was like $150 million, if I recall.
Once you get into the hundreds of millions, it's like,
I was gonna say, I mean, it's an astronomical number. I don't know semantics. I don't know how much they get into it at a certain point, at least from our standpoint. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think the score for Oppenheimer is very good. I can see why. Spoiler alert, it won. But I think I'm gonna give it to the late Robbie Robertson for Killers of the Flower Moon.
Yeah, that's my pick as well. And it's tough. I think that it's the only score that kind of stuck with me compared to these others. I'm not sure what American Fiction and Indiana Jones are doing here. I don't even remember American Fiction having a score.
I was going to say, I mean, I get at least Indiana Jones, like that's like a like legacy John Williams score.
I guess.
I don't even remember, like you said, like what the score was for American Fiction. Like, I mean,
was there one? Yeah, it was like, I guess.
I mean,
I'm sure
there was. I mean, sure it was. It probably was like,
yeah, and I think Oppenheimer is close second for me. Poor Things, like the music is like kind of the last thing I like about the movie. And it's not bad or anything. It's just, again, it just kind of sinks into the background for me. Maybe if I rewatch the movie, I'll be actually, you know what, this score is incredible. But on first watch, yeah, it didn't really resonate.
Have a soft spot for orchestral kind of scores, and I think the Poor Things one is kind of fun and quirky in its own way. I don't think it deserves an Oscar, but I think it's a good score.
Yeah. The Killers of the Flower Moon, I mean, that score, it punctuates the movie, you know? The way it incorporates the Osage Nation's music, the way that it kind of just pumps like the blood of the movie throughout, it is just, yeah. And that was the one that like was kind of shaking me to my core.
Mean the pump the oil of the film.
There you go. Hey man, what is blood but you know the oil of the earth. So all right, so yeah, we agree on Killers of the Flower Moon, but the academy went with Oppenheimer, which also a good choice, not to oversell it. All right, let's go to original song. This is always the weirdest one for me. I always find this category to be such a farce a lot of the time, but there's actually a couple of good ones here. So okay, we have What Was I Made For, from Barbie. I think Billie Eilish and Finneas O'Connell did the lyrics there. We have The Fire Inside from Flamin' Hot, which I cannot believe Flamin' Hot got nominated for an Oscar. That is hilarious. I'm Just Ken, another Barbie song. It Never Went Away from American Symphony, which I don't know what that movie is. And then finally, Wazazi, a song for my people from Killers of the Flower Moon. For me, it came down to Wazazi and also I'm Just Ken. Look, I don't have anything against What Was I Made For from Barbie. It's cute, but I'm Just Ken. It's the song, man. I keep picking Barbie for like all the Ken related stuff.
Sure.
But I'm a boy. Like I'm very simple and I have boyish tendencies, I guess. But sure. I'm Just Ken is just such a great song. It's so good. It's down to just the way the song works into the movie. All the choreography for it, the lyrics themselves, like when you really unpack the lyrics, it's just such a beautiful ode to weird masculinity that I'm just always going to be here for. And I just think it's fantastic. It's heartwarming. It's ridiculous. And I could watch that entire like song number like 20 times and not get sick of it. So that's my boring pick.
Sure. No, I mean, if anything, I think What Was I Made For was the boring one of the two. Like
I thought Song for My People was gonna win. I mean, that's a great song too.
I think it was gonna be a Barbie song no matter what. I think it was clear that What Was I Made For was going to win, but I think the hope was I'm Just Ken was gonna sneak in and win because I know you didn't watch the ceremony. The I'm Just Ken musical number was clearly one of the high points of the night.
I heard about
Ryan Gosling performed it. They put a lot of flair into it, a lot of zest. And yeah, no, I mean, I think that's a clear winner as far as I'm concerned for in this category. As far as
yours is I'm Just Ken. We agree?
Yeah. No, I think it's nice. Pretty undeniable. And I think that is the song of the year cinematically that stands out the most. Like I don't think back on the Billie Eilish song and I'm like, oh yeah, that was the song. I can barely listen. Anytime it comes on the radio, I turn it off because it's just boring. It's like a sad, dull song. Like it's pretty, but you know, I outside of the movie, I just don't really get a lot out of it. Versus I'm Just Ken, you know, that's just it's a bop, as the kids
would
say.
The problem, Will, of course, is that we're misogynists. So
well, of course, yeah, yeah.
What are you gonna do? What are you gonna do?
Well, real quick though, I will say Fire Within or Fire Inside, whatever, the Flaming Hot song. That is the obligatory Diane Warren. She gets nominated for any piece of crap song that she gets nominated for or that she puts out in a year because she has friends with the Academy. That's why it got nominated. And American Symphony was the Netflix John Baptiste documentary that I mentioned earlier.
Oh, okay. Cool. The song, like John Baptiste.
Yeah, and the song was fine.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, fine is about the expectation when it comes to the Oscars. Okay. Production design for this one, and we gotta speed it up a little bit. We're taking a minute. Okay, let's go through these. We have Oppenheimer, which I won't go through it. There's a lot of people involved. They all did a great job. Oppenheimer. Napoleon, Poor Things, Killers of the Flower Moon, and Barbie. This is so easy. It's ridiculous. It's Barbie. The production design in Barbie, it's the same thing with the costumes. Like, it's just the amount of detail, and you kind of mentioned it too. It's like, it's a risk. It's contemporary, and I got to give it to Sarah Greenwood for Barbie. The production design, it's the best thing for me about the movie almost. Like, it's just so cool seeing Barbie's dream house, and it's so convincing, and it's part of the joke of the whole movie. It's funny, and it's also part of the story, the dream house, who's going to live in it. Barbie, production design, that's the winner.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's disappointing that we got to speed up just when I'm starting to disagree with you again, but no, I mean, I think the production design for Barbie is obviously super impressive. It would probably be my number two pick of these nominees, but I think Poor Things, it was a very understandable win. Like, I think there's just so many sets in that movie that are either just really fun. You just look at the sets and they're really funny and they're very thoughtfully produced and like just filled with like just sight gags. I mean, I love like the brothel set where there's just like the door has a giant glass penis. I love the ship and the way that like the interiors of that are off kilter and like kind of like swishy, but also just fit the vibe of the thing. I don't know. I think there's so much to admire about the production values of Poor Things. I think that was a very understandable win. If Barbie had won, I would have been totally fine with that. I think it's an understandable win to be sure, but and I do think the production and design for Killers of Fire Moon shouldn't be dismissed either. The way that they're able to recreate some of those locations, especially if you look at the book and the photos and see them, it's remarkable. It's incredible. But yeah, I still got to give it the Poor Things, I think.
Poor Things, it did win, and I'm not upset about it because it's funny I say that because I really appreciate Barbie, but Poor Things is basically like the production design of a BioShock movie, which is such an easy sell for me. And I know that means nothing to you. But the BioShock video games, like that's a big reason why I love being in that world as much as I did. So, yeah, it's not, I don't want to be dismissive. I just thought Barbie was just so well done because it was just so unlike anything I'd seen before. But yes, everything you said about Poor Things was very correct.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, animated short film. I didn't see any of these. My bad. But quickly, we have War is Over, inspired by the music of John and Yoko. We have Letters to a Pig, 95 Senses, Our Uniform, and Pachydermy. What do you got, Will? Which one was actually, which one did it?
So usually the live action category picks the worst one as the winner. And in this case, the Academy went with the animated. The worst one obviously being War is Over, which is a kind of trite, you know, shallow look at war, punctuated by the music, as the title says, of John and Yoko Lennon. Yeah, just totally whatever. Weta did it. Animation looks nice, I guess, but visually and narratively way less interesting than any of these. For me, it was between Pachyderm and 95 Senses. I got to give it to Pachyderm, which I think is really just a captivating but challenging short. I think it did not get its full due. The way that it tells the abuse of the character in this sort of fairy tale way that respects the horrors of it, but does in a way that's presentable for younger audiences is it's very beautifully animated, but tough to watch if you catch what's going on. And it's an unsettling short to be sure, but I think it's the best of the bunch. The 95 Senses, directed by the man who made Napoleon Dynamite, Jared Hess, along with his wife, Teresa, I think, Hess, is also very good and has Tim Blake Nelson. I thought that was really a strong short. However, I'm going to give it to Pachyderm.
Okay, Pachydermy, which didn't win, as you said, War is Over did. But let's move on to live action short film. And this is going to be another Will Ashton show. For this one, we have The After, we have Invincible, Night of Fortune, Red, White, and Blue, and The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar, and which was Wes Anderson, right?
That is correct. And I saw some pushback about Wes Anderson being nominated because people are like, oh, the live action category is supposed to be for, you know, up and coming filmmakers to kind of announce themselves, their vision. Having an established, you know, Oscar nominated director like Wes Anderson in the category kind of takes the fun out of it.
A lot of great directors, like feature film directors, have gotten their start from this nomination. You know, just being nominated, not even winning.
Sorry, for some reason, Siri just came on for me. Sorry, well, say what you just said again.
I was just saying that a lot of great directors, like feature-length directors, got their start just from being nominated for a short, especially with live action, yeah.
Definitely. But I mean, that's in theory, I would agree that this should be a younger man's game. This should go to, you know, someone who's still up and coming, who just makes a really standout short film. However, the Academy traditionally gives dog water shorts this prize to have like something to say, you know, socially that clumsily makes its peace. That is to say, you know, not all these short films here were bad. I think Night of Fortune and Invincible were good. However, I know in a lesser year that this would have gone to The After, which is a horrible short film. Right there with the ABC's book banning is one of the worst things that was nominated this year at the Oscars. So I do think it's safe to say that Wes Anderson's Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar leaps and bounds was better than these other ones. I know it's not really fair to those other short films. I can sympathize with that. Also, I don't really care because the better short film won and it deserved to win.
All right. That's Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar, which, yeah, Wes Anderson and Stephen Rails. Okay, for sound, this is an interesting one. Okay, we have The Creator. We also have Maestro, The Zone of Interest, Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning Part 1, and Oppenheimer. Okay, this is not too difficult a one for me to narrow down, at least. Easily take out Mission Impossible, easily take out The Creator. I like The Creator a lot, but the sound in that film is not what's great about that film to me. So for me, it comes down to Maestro, Oppenheimer, and The Zone of Interest. I take out Maestro because Maestro only has like a handful of scenes where I think the sound is like fantastic. So then it's down to Oppenheimer and The Zone of Interest. And it comes down to two things. Oppenheimer sound, again, similar to Maestro, it's like one scene that really stands out. Not that the sound isn't impressive throughout, but it's like that one scene, right? With like the stomping and the atomic bomb stuff. Where you're like, oh my gosh, like I'm feeling everything that the director wants me to feel. But The Zone of Interest, it's like the sound is the movie. Like, I think when it comes down to it, it's got to be The Zone of Interest. Not to downplay like what's impressive about it, but I mean, everything that you're supposed to feel about the movie comes from the sound, from like the mundane things that people are doing, but also what reverberates atmospherically. And it's just, it's chilling stuff. It's one of those things where I think that they had to get it perfect for the sound mixing and the sound editing to really do what it's supposed to do and for you to understand it without it hitting you over the head, because they could have so easily overdone it. And the fact that they didn't is just like so impressive to me. So yeah, Zone of Interest is the clear winner.
Yeah, 100% agree. And I thought Oppenheimer was going to win. And I was pleasantly surprised when Zone of Interest won for best sound, because like you said, even though the sound design and sound mixing and sound editing for Oppenheimer is very good, and it would have been an understandable win. The sound is so integral, or even sometimes the lack of sound is so integral to Zone of Interest and the success and the horror of that film. I really do think that is quite easily the best of these, and I was very, very happy to see it win this category.
Yeah, Zone of Interest won, and yeah, the award went to Tarn Willers and Johnny Byrne. Okay, let's go to visual effects. Here's another interesting one. We had Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1, Napoleon, The Creator, and Godzilla Minus 1. Now, I did not see Godzilla Minus 1 or Napoleon. So for me, it's tough. I am not a great judge on this because I heard Godzilla Minus 1 is just so fantastic. And I'm sure that there's a reason for that. If I had to pick, though, of the ones I did see, it would be The Creator. I just think the visual effects in The Creator are fantastic. I just love the design of the robots and how that effect kind of gets pulled off. And there's just a lot of like great visual design in general with that movie. I kind of wish it got maybe something for production design, but I understand that the other stuff in that category are pretty strong too. But yeah, the creator is where I would go.
Similar to the previous category we discussed, I kind of just assumed the creator was going to win, and it would have been an understandable win because I think the special effects are very sleek, very stylish, and I think it pulls off a lot with a little in some respects. And as far as something this big and massive and world expansive as this film, I think even though it is a very high budgeted film, like I think it could have been 10 times that in a lesser filmmaker's hands. I think Gareth Edwards is a really, for his whatever narrative faults and dramatic faults he might have, I mean, obviously he's a great visual effects artist and director, and I think he did visually a very nice job with that film. However, Godzilla Minus One, that is the blockbuster of last year. I think that is the little film that could, as far as Godzilla being a little anything. But yeah, I think that movie, it's so incredible. The special effects are really amazing. And then just knowing what they were able to pull off with a fairly modest budget, as far as these things go, I think is really just amazing stuff. And I was likewise very happy when Godzilla won. The visual effects artist for Godzilla came up on stage with little Godzilla dolls and figurines. And it was very cute, very charming. And you got to hear Arnold Schwarzenegger say Godzilla, which is something I never thought I'd see on the Academy stage, but that was a great moment for all parties involved, including me.
There you go. I mean, you know what? Maybe for my Japan trip, I'll do Godzilla Minus One and Perfect Days as a double feature. Why not? It did win the award, went to Takashi Yamazaki, Kyoko Shibuya, Masaki Takahashi, and Tatsuji Nojima. All right, and then we'll go to the writing categories. We just have the two writing categories and Best Picture, and we are done. All right, so we'll start with adapted screenplay. For this one, we have American Fiction, written for the screen by Cord Jefferson. We have Barbie, written by Greta Gerwig and Noah Baumbach. We have Oppenheimer, written for the screen by Christopher Nolan. Poor Things, with a screenplay by Tony McNamara. And The Zone of Interest, which is written by Jonathan Glazer. Okay, easily I would take American Fiction out of this. I just don't think it's that great of a movie. And I don't really get, like, Barbie? What? No. And then with Oppenheimer, kind of a similar thing. And Zone of Interest is so different from the source material that I'm just kind of like, maybe that's a reason to kind of give it to The Zone of Interest, because, you know, I think Glazer took what was kind of like a weird book and translated it really well. But ultimately, I got to give it to Poor Things, because I think what McNamara does with that movie, or with that book, which the original book is just so bizarre, and it is a tough thing to kind of like translate and kind of maintain the Yorgos Lanthimos of it all. I think Poor Things is like the most successful, but it's close. I think Zone of Interest, I also kind of respect, but I just think that it's such a departure that I got to give it to Poor Things.
I mean, I will say I've read or am currently reading a lot of the nominees or the books that were nominated. I didn't read Oppenheimer, the source material for it. I am currently reading Erasure, the source material for American Fiction. And I will agree with you that was the win and nomination that made probably the least amount of sense for me. I think Cord Jefferson had a great speech that night, but yeah, I don't really get that. And I think the sad thing here, as far as the adapted category goes, is that the elephant in the room is, I think the best adapted screenplay was a nominee, which is for Killers of the Flower Moon. I think it's just kind of baffling that didn't get recognized, but that's neither here nor there. I think I'm going to have to give it to Oppenheimer, which I haven't read the script and haven't read the source material, admittedly, but I think just knowing how expansive that is, how big of a story that is, and like it's like this Pulitzer Prize winning 700, 800 page book, it's very, you know, factual, very detail oriented in a way that could be very lumbersome and cumbersome to a viewer. I think it is to Nolan's credit that he made it accessible and entertaining and engaging while not sacrificing the narrative or historical value of it. So I think that's a really impressive thing to do. And of the nominees, I think I would give it to Christopher Nolan.
I feel like a lot of what you just said, too, I feel like was very similar to what you would have said for Killers of the Flower Moon, which is understandable. Yeah. But all right. Yeah. Like you said, American Fiction is the one that actually won, and which we are both nonplussed about. All right. Let's go to writing for original screenplay. So for this one, we have The Holdovers, written by David Hemmingson. We have Maestro, written by Bradley Cooper and Josh Singer. May December, written by Sammy Birch, with the stories by Sammy Birch and Alex Machanek. We have Anatomy of a Fall, which was written by Justin Triet and Arthur Harari. And we have Past Lives, written by Celine Song. This is honestly one of the hardest categories for me, like easily. It's so difficult for me.
It's kind of night and day compared to adapted.
Isn't it? Yeah. Honestly, I think like I would take Maestro out. I don't think that is a strong screenplay. There are things I really like about the movie, but the writing isn't it. My opinion keeps changing because Anatomy of a Fall, brilliant screenplay, so well done, totally captures like your interest in such a powerful way. Holdovers, warm, affectionate, totally like wins you over in like a real authentic way. May December, ballsy. I love May December and I wanted it to be nominated for more. I think that this movie has stuck with me in a way that a lot of the other movies haven't. And then Past Lives, which Celine Song should have been nominated for Best Director, in my opinion. Past Lives is just a brilliant film. There's a poster of the film right over here on my wall here. So I'm just kind of, that's the thing. I would give it to Past Lives because it didn't get anything else. And I think that it should. But sure. If I have to be super honest, like it's tough because is it a better original screenplay? I don't know. I have to decide. I don't know yet. Well, you have to go. You have to help.
Okay. I was going to say, I could go ahead if you are still delineating.
I got to do some math. Yeah. I'm going to do a little bit of calculus while you.
It's tough. And I never expected this one to win, but I got to go with May December. I think for me, the reason why is not only is that an engaging, thoughtful movie and weirdly an entertaining film on its own right, but I think the screenplay and the characters of that film continue to sort of evolve in my mind in a way that I find like there's a something kind of deceptively simple about the story and the writing of it, in the way that like you think you kind of understand it, but like you think about it more and you think about the way that the screenplay and the story and the film evolve. And it's really thoughtful and really engaging, but it's funny and it's odd and it's like you said, it's just ballsy and it just feels so captivating in a way that I think. It's something I've ruminated on a lot since I've seen it. And I think that's also the credit of Todd Haynes as a director and the performances from all the cast. Obviously, they're not the exception there. But I think for me, May December is a screenplay that continues to rivet me and entertain me and perplex me of these nominees. And even though it is a really strong category with a ton of deserving nominees, I agree that Maestro is probably the weakest of these five. But yeah, I give it to May December.
May December and Past Lives, there's such great case studies in the brilliance of what isn't said. And that's just as difficult, right? I think with Past Lives, what sticks out to me is just the emotional writing when it comes to how people communicate without really communicating what they feel, but trying to get it across and communicate in a different way. I think May December is very similar in that respect. The Holdover is, I think, is just a bit more direct, but I think a lot of it comes down to just the Giamatti character and his monologues and the way he's trying to connect with a kid, but speaking his language. That's kind of what's brilliant about the writing there, is like them kind of figuring each other out and finding ways to kind of, you know, connect over, you know, history and their own experiences. Anatomy of a Fall is a whole movie about arguments and like trying to pick apart words and impressions. And like, it's impossible. Well, I can't do it. I have to pick a movie. I'm going with my heart. It's Past Lives. I did it.
I mean, very deserving. I mean, you know, like I said, unfortunately, similar to May December, I didn't expect that one to win, but I'm really glad it was nominated. And I hope, you know, similar to, is it Sonny Branch? Branch? What's this? Sammy.
It's Sammy Birch. Yeah. Who did the screenplay.
I'm really excited to see.
Alex McChanick got a co-story credit for it.
Mm-hmm. I think I'm also in Sammy Birch's category or corner because of how she got screwed over with Coyote versus Acme. So I think that's also kind of why I wanted her to win. In some respects, like just as an extra kind of F you to Warner Brothers.
The political Oscar voter. Hmm.
Sure, yeah. Obviously, that wasn't the driving force, but it would be like an extra cherry on top if that had happened, I'm sure which I didn't expect it to.
Yeah. I'm sure that's what the actual Oscar voters tell themselves. Yeah.
Sure.
All right.
Yes. Best Picture?
Best Picture is our final category, as expected and as deserved. Whew, it's a tough one. This is a tough one. Okay, Maestro, sure. Okay, Past Lives. We knew it wouldn't win, but you know, that's why I had to give an original screenplay. Poor Things, The Zone of Interest, Killers of the Flower Moon, Oppenheimer, American Fiction, Anatomy of a Fall, Barbie, and The Holdovers. Okay. This is, okay, American Fiction. Hey, sorry, thanks for coming. You can go out. That's the door. Bye. Have fun. Have a safe drive home. Maestro, hey, we really appreciate you bringing over those appetizers. We'll really enjoy them. But the party's kind of getting late. We're going to hang out with everybody else here, but you could just go ahead and go. Yeah, see ya. Bye. Okay, now that we've cleared the room, Will, it's just us and the crew. Where do you go with this one, Will? Because, like, what's your thinking here on Best Picture? Is it a political thing, or do you have a genuine, like, this is the best movie of 2023 that of the nominations?
I think for this one, it just kind of comes down to personal taste, you know, more than anything. I think it's what
don't all these
most effective.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah,
sure. But I mean, like, I think for me, ultimately, like, I think we have, you know, at least five or six truly outstanding films that were nominated. And, you know, I really don't take any issue with, like, at least 9 or 8 of the nominees. Like, I think American Fiction is the only one that's just kind of average or, you know, less than stellar of these nominees.
There's always that too, you know?
Sure.
It always sneaks in by the skin of its teeth. Sure. Yeah.
But I think it's just like, it's annoying because it's like, that could have been May December. And if that was May December, like, what a great run of nominees that would have been, you know? But that is neither here nor there.
You're trying to get actors to support a movie like May December? That's tough.
Sure. I think for me, it's like a three-way thing between The Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, and Zone of Interest. I think, you know, Zone of Interest, because it got recognized in the international feature and sound and whatnot, I think I'd be fine with it if it didn't get Best Picture. Killers of the Flower Moon, as much as it would pain me to see it lose yet again, I feel like it's not the film that I think of, like, okay, that's, as for as good as it is, I don't know if it's like, this should be recognized as like the best picture of Martin Scorsese's filmography or whatever, right? I don't know. I mean, it's up there, but I don't know if I can put it in the same leagues is like, you know, Raging Bull or what have you. So I'm going to give it to The Holdovers. I think it just shows everything that Alexander Payne does so well. It shows everything that Paul Giamatti does so well. I think it's, like you said, it just the full package. It's great writing, great production design, great score, great cinematography.
Great soundtrack.
Great soundtrack.
Of all these movies, like, I still listen to the soundtrack all the time.
I mean, I take no issue with Oppenheimer winning. I think it's a really good film, and I think it's a good, like, everyone's happy, everyone saw this movie, everyone can agree it's a really good type of film. Mm-hmm. But for me, I think of the films I'm going to think back on with the most affection and bliss, Holdovers has to be up there.
Well, for me, it comes down to The Holdovers and Poor Things. And it, again, very tough. I think that Zone of Interest, it kind of loses me with like one or two scenes, so I kind of have to knock it out for that reason. And then Killers of the Flower Moon, look, you know, we talked about it. It's a little chunky. There were a couple of there were some things in that movie that didn't 100% work for me. Barbie, kind of similar. Some of the jokes weren't that great. Anatomy of a Fall, it's definitely up there as well. I don't take much issue with it, but, you know, it's really good at what it does, but it doesn't try that much. And then Oppenheimer, I think, is just a fantastic movie all around. I'm glad it won. It's very deserving. It's just a great picture. And is it the best picture? Well, you know. Yeah, I think it comes down to Poor Things for me. Poor Things is the one. I just think that movie, it's the movie that had the largest and most significant impact on me. I think it's the movie that just all around does everything it can to just be an unforgettable movie. Holdovers, like to what you're saying, it's so great. It's just, you know, it's a new Christmas classic for me. And I think that, you know, from the performances to the writing, it's all aces. But I think Poor Things also has the great writing, the great, but on top of that, it also has the brilliant production design that's just like so imaginative, fantastical, which is a personal taste thing. You know, a lot of people will look at a movie like Holdovers or Anatomy of Fall and appreciate the certain literary elements of it a little bit more. But yeah, for me, Poor Things is the one that, for my sensibilities, that's exactly the kind of movie that just, you know, knocks me out the most. And it's that kind of world. So yeah, Poor Things.
Well, who would have thought that you would pick a Yorgos Lanthimos movie over me?
I mean, didn't I like The Favorite a little bit more than you too? So
maybe
not
that
unprecedented.
I think you're softer on the, what's the screenwriter, Tony McNerma films?
Tony McNamara?
McNamara. I think I prefer the ones where Yorgos writes himself, but I recognize that these are all very good films from him, and I have nothing but admiration and respect for him, and I'm really excited to see where he goes next. But yeah, I mean, I can certainly respect Poor Things as a pick. I gotta stick with Holdovers, and I don't know, maybe I'll regret it later on. Maybe I'll be like, man, I should pick Killers of the Flower Moon. Maybe I should pick Zone of Interest, but I'm going with my heart.
Yeah, I mean, and as you're wont to do. And Tony McNamara, yes, also wrote The Favourite, but also wrote Cruella, which I think what you're trying to tell me is that you are a big fan of Cruella, which
That explains
I'm glad
a lot,
you've
though.
Come to see the light.
Maybe that explains why you like Cruella. Maybe. I know you also create the Hulu show, The Great, which is supposed to be pretty good.
Yeah, I heard that's all right. Nicholas Holt and Elle Fanning, I think.
Elle Fanning, yeah.
So yeah, McNamara kind of sticks with the same folks, right? Because Holt was in The Favourite, yeah. Okay, that'll do it for If We Picked the Winners. Da-na-na-na. It was fun. And Will, I think that there was definitely a lot. There were way more, you know, common. There's much more common ground for us this year than in previous years, I think. That's fun and exciting and weird.
Yeah, I mean, definitely way more than I expected, to be sure.
Mm-hmm, yeah. But ultimately, I think a lot of great stuff won, and a lot of things I still need to watch. But in the meantime, thanks as always for listening. We'll be back soon, we hope, to talk about a movie.
Well,
yeah, your guess is as good as mine.
I was going to say, don't set up promises you can't keep, Mr. I'm going to Japan for a month or whatever.
From the internet, California, I'm John Agron.
And from Tinseltown, America, I'm Will Ashton.
I'm not sure what that was. See you next time.
Bye, everybody.